The headlines read, U.S. Supreme Court unanimously rules in favor of Catholic social services and against Philadelphia's non-discrimination law. And that's true. But the basis for the ruling and the justices' varying opinions say a lot more about what Fulton really means for those who want to live and work according to their beliefs, and what it means for future cases waiting in the wings. CAP President Kathy Herod discusses all of this with Alliance Defending Freedom attorney Greg Chofwin. Here now is Kathy Herod.
Welcome to Engage Arizona. This is Kathy Herod with Center for Arizona Policy. And on June 17th, the U.S. Supreme Court issued a very important decision in Fulton versus City of Philadelphia. With me on today's podcast is Greg Chofwin. Greg is legal counsel for Alliance Defending Freedom's Center for Legislative Advocacy. His specialty, his focus is on legislation that impacts religious liberty at the state level. We've worked with Greg on some issues in the Arizona legislature in the 2021 session and are grateful to have him with us today. He's got his law degree from Notre Dame Law School and is a University of Texas Law School grad. I always just need to say I forgive him for being Notre Dame. But anyway, as far as old rivals from the past. But anyway, well, Greg, welcome today to Engage Arizona.
Thank you very much for having me.
So finally, I feel like finally, we have the U.S. Supreme Court decision in Fulton versus Philadelphia, City of Philadelphia. Would you just start by laying out the facts of the case for our listeners who may not be familiar exactly what this case was about?
I couldn't do that. And I think it's very important to note that in this case, there were no couples that were turned down or denied in the City of Philadelphia. Catholic Social Services even said if anybody like that came to them, they would refer them to another 20 organizations in the City of Philadelphia that would serve them. But that never happened. Just because the City of Philadelphia learned that this was their policy, they decided to cancel them. And so the Catholic Social Services brought suit against them and a foster mother who had spent years serving many foster children brought suit. They actually lost at the lower courts. And then just yesterday in a unanimous decision, the Supreme Court held in favor of Catholic Social Services.
Well, and it's important to note, I think, that this isn't just in Philadelphia that this has happened. There have been a number of other jurisdictions, and even in our own state of Arizona, we have faith-based foster care adoption agencies like Christian Family Care Agency, like Catholic Social Services, that these local ordinances can start to affect to try to dictate whether they can follow their religious beliefs or not in the placement of children. So you mentioned that it was a 9-0 decision. Wow, have we ever had a 9-0 unanimous decision in a religious freedom case? It's been rare if it's happened.
You know, there actually have been, and one of the important things that we realize from today is that once again, the Supreme Court has shown us that religious liberty is not a right or left issue. This is a fundamental right that is front and foremost in our Constitution. There have been other cases when it comes to church autonomy that the Supreme Court has said very clearly that the government cannot impose ministers or teachers on religious organizations. And so this echoes that, now there are some controversial cases that are closer 5-4, but this was not one of those. And, I think we'll come out in the discussion later, but one of those main decisions was the controlling case in many of these free exercise cases, which is the Employment Division in Oregon versus Smith. That was a 5-4 decision, and that was a contentious part of this case, and which is why we had a 77-page concurring opinion coming from Justice Alito.
Greg, first share what we're hearing a lot about Smith, and I would assume that many don't know what employment discrimination versus Smith was. Those of us in the field hear about it all the time. We've suffered through it in a sense. So what was the Smith case and why is it a problem?
Yes. Thanks for asking that, because that's a very important question to set up the context for what happened yesterday. And I think it's important to give just what happened before Employment Division versus Smith, which was in a 1990 case, decided in 1990. Before that, and to set the stage here, our country, we have the Constitution, which sets up the government and the Bill of Rights, thus the certain fundamental rights that we as Americans enjoy. And the government is not allowed to breach those rights. I think we see that very clearly in many of the other contexts in which our rights are infringed. And so for most of our history, whenever the government made a law that infringed on our free exercise rights, before 1990, the thinking was, well, if our rights are being infringed upon, then the government needs a compelling interest. That means an interest of the highest order, not just something they want to do, but something that they almost have to do. And then when they make that law, they have to make sure that they're doing it in a way that is the least restrictive on religious exercise as possible. And so, you know, and Chief Justice Roberts phrased that as, if there's any other way, and yesterday he phrased it, if there's any other way they can do this to not burden religion, they need to do that. And so that's what we had until 1990. But then 1990 was, again, a 5-4 case. And coming out of Oregon, we had some Native Americans that used peyote in a religious service. So it was their religious exercise to use peyote, but they ran up against a law that said you cannot smoke peyote or other substances. And that was a law that applied generally to everybody with no exceptions. And so at the Supreme Court, and it was decided by Justice Scalia, conservative justice, that was trying to figure out how do we parse this issue of people who want to live according to their free exercise of religion, while at the same time in a country of laws that do need to maintain order. And in that decision, he held that if a law applies generally, meaning to everybody with no exceptions, and if it's neutral towards religion, meaning it doesn't target religion, then it stands as long as there's a rational basis, meaning as long as the government had any reason that's rational to do it, it stands, even if it burdens your religion. And now the dissenters in that opinion pointed out what a destruction that was to what we previously enjoyed as far as our religious exercise was. Because no longer do we have a presumption that my exercise of religion will be protected in this country. Now we have to think, oh, wait, does this law apply generally? And is it neutral towards religion? Because if it does, I'm sorry, I can't stand. So that was the decision. And that had lasted for the last 30 years. And what we've seen in lower courts have applied it in many situations. There have been some disputes about how to apply it. And many of the other cases that have risen to the Supreme Court about the free exercise that have considered Smith have actually run into the situation where they say, oh, well, Smith had to do with laws that were generally applicable or neutral towards religion, and neutral towards religion. But many of the cases that get to the Supreme Court are considered not generally applicable for one reason or another, or they are targeting religion, so they're not neutral towards religion. So Smith doesn't apply. So that problematic, difficult application of Smith was avoided in many cases by having laws that are not generally applicable. And that's what we saw in yesterday's decision as well.
That the court basically, that Justice Roberts, to get the votes that he wanted and to have a narrow decision, basically said the City of Philadelphia's ordinance was not generally applicable. Is that the right way to phrase that?
So there were two things in the city. One was an ordinance that said that they needed to, it was a accommodations, fair practices ordinance for public accommodations. And the court put that aside by saying that the Catholic social services does not count as a public accommodation because it characterized those as hotels and businesses generally, whereas the foster care services is more of a context of it's more complicated. It's not generally available to the public. It's much more selective. But there was the other prong by which the city said they didn't want to do work with the Catholic social services, which was their contract. And their contract had a provision saying that they would not discriminate against people for various reasons. But there was a provision in one paragraph of that contract saying that a commissioner could grant an exception to that requirement. And then that's how we get to the majority's view that it was not generally applicable because, hypothetically speaking, there was a provision in which the city could have given an exception. So, you know, if anything, what the yesterday's decision was, it really strengthens the fact that a law has to apply across the board with no exceptions whatsoever, even hypothetically, in order to get Smith treatment.
So you mentioned Justice Alito's 77-page concurrence. And Justice Alito ended his concurrence, I believe this was the last at the very end, and I'm just going to quote it. The court has emitted a wisp of a decision that leaves religious liberty in a confused and vulnerable state. Those who count on this court to stand up for the First Amendment have every right to be disappointed, as am I. And he had along with him Justices Thomas and Gorsuch. So he had three. This is a concurring opinion. So first, in layman terms, what did Alito mean by that? Why did he write the 77 pages? Was this going to be the majority opinion and he could not get the 5 votes for it to be a majority opinion? But first of all, what is a concurring opinion and what does it mean?
Right. So in this case, so it was unanimous because all of the justices agreed in the outcome. Now, the justices then will explain why they get to that conclusion. And so we had the majority opinion written by the Chief Justice, which is what I was explaining before. They got to that conclusion because the city's actions weren't based on rules and policies that were not generally applicable. Now, the concurrences are when the other justices that may not wholeheartedly agree with that agreement. So they can agree with that agreement and then give some additional explanation, or they can say, I don't actually agree with your reasoning. I don't agree with your opinion. I agree with your outcome, but not your opinion. So I'm going to give a different reason why I would have the same outcome. And that's what we get with Alito's beautiful 77-page explanation. And now what he did there, right. So, and I can explain a bit more later about the numbers and how the different justices agreed, wrote on and agreed with different of the opinions. But Justice Alito's opinion is really what, in my view, is what you need to put forward in order to move past Smith. And so in a sense, it's moving past Smith, making the old new again. It's dissolving Smith and going back to what we had before and making it more workable going forward. So in the 77-page concurring opinion, what he did was to explain the history of the First Amendment and the arguments on both sides as to what the Free Exercise Clause protects. He went through text, he went through substance, he went through scholarly articles, he went through all of the precedent. He went through the Smith decision and how it has been treated over time. And it was really a masterful job, I thought, of giving us the history that we want. This will be read over for years and hundreds of articles will be written about this to really expound upon it. So that when the day does come that the court overturns Smith, which it does look like would happen in the future if the right court case presents itself, that this is the body that of work that we need to continue to develop and work on to get to that outcome.
So when you talk about overturning Smith, we had an interesting concurring opinion by Justice Amy Coney Barrett, of course, the newest justice, and where she essentially, is she saying that, hey, I'm okay with overturning Smith, but not with this case. I agree with Roberts. We don't have to use this case, and I'm not really sure what we'd replace it with, so let's not overturn Smith yet. But she opened the door that, yeah, I'll be okay with overturning Smith sometime.
That's right. That's right. And so that's what she's saying. And, you know, on the Supreme Court, one of the typical, you know, some justices will be a bit different. Some will just go straight to the chase and some will be a bit more stand more with stare decisis and let the cases develop over time. And here, you know, depending on which justice you are and depending on where you fit in the political spectrum, you could criticize or interpret what they're doing in different ways. But my take on it was that, you know, for Justice Kavanaugh, so Justice Barrett wrote a concurring opinion with agreeing with the majority opinion and writing another concurring opinion, and Justice Kavanaugh went along with her. And what they were saying, look, we agree with the majority opinion, and we also see what you're saying, Justice Alito, and it's fairly compelling. I think it would be fair to characterize, you know, their disposition as one of, yes, Smith is on thin ice now. There are reasons to change it. But two things, like you said, one, it's just a quandary. What do we replace it with? What do we do next? Now that, as a judge, that's not really a convincing reason to not do something because, you know, you focus on certain cases and you resolve them and you move forward. It's a perplexing question, good for us scholars to develop, but we'll see what they do with that. But then the second one was that, you know, Justice Kavanaugh and Justice Barrett agreed and they followed what Chief Justice Roberts was doing with his majority opinion in how he saw the City of Philadelphia's contract and the Fair Practices Ordinance. And they agreed that, look, if this doesn't go under Smith, we don't need to wrestle with Smith. And so they agreed with that. And so they were able to avoid having to tackle it and overturn the precedent. Now, reading Gorsuch's his concurrence, you know, I think he was really trying to bring them on board to Alito's view with his arguments.
Just a hopeful sign for the future. There's one part of the, I still need to digest Alito's opinion much more thoroughly, but there's one part of his opinion that jumped out at me on page 25. And he wrote, the text of the free exercise clause gives a specific group of people, those who wish to engage in the exercise of religion, the right to do so without hindrance. The language of the clause does not tie this right to the treatment of persons not in this group. So by that, does he mean that Catholic social services, it could be Christian family care, it could be any faith-based groups, okay, so they have the right to exercise their religious beliefs without hindrance. And so in this context, without hindrance to affect, say, the same-sex couple that wants to adopt a child or foster care a child. And so that, so Catholic social services had the right to follow their religious beliefs to place children only with married couples or single individuals without regard to whether, what impact that would have on an unmarried couple or a same-sex couple. Is that what Alito is saying? We hope?
Yeah. You know, I would say yes to the first half, and then the second half is a bit more more tricky, because you know the way that these cases work is that they're really based on cases or controversies. That's what it takes to bring a case to court, and in the particular context, how they would actually play out, you really do need to see. It's too early to really give a full judgment. So yes, I think there's a full-hearted from Gorsuch, from Alito, from Thomas, justices all. A full-hearted approval and support of the free exercise of religion and from hindrances from the state. You know, you cannot force people to believe one way or another. And when they go out into public, they don't need to put their beliefs in a closet and go about their day. They can live in public freely with their religious exercise. You know, but when you know, I don't want to give a what I think would be an outcome of an actual case, because they always depend on the particular facts. But when you go back to what we've had before, which is what Justice Alito is advocating for, a strict scrutiny, you know, that's not a blanket, a be all end all rule. You go to strict scrutiny, which means that the government needs a compelling interest. If there's a law that's burdening religion, it has to have a compelling, a very important interest of the highest order to do so. And it still needs to burden religion the least amount possible. So that means if it can give an exception or if it can accommodate religion, it needs to do so. So, you know, maybe yes is the answer to the question fully, your question fully, but it could be that there's a situation in which, you know, the state has a compelling interest to burden religion in some way, and it has done it the least, the way that it burdens it the least. So it's conceivable that you know, our First Amendment right bends, just like the free speech rights bend. You know, they don't have the free speech rights. Everything, you know, I don't remember who said it, but that everything in politics is up to a point, right? So all of our rights are up to a point, and it's all about drawing lines and prudence.
Well, and that's, and of course, in Philadelphia, a same-sex couple or an unmarried couple wishing to adopt or be foster parents had many other choices for agencies that would have placed children with them. So it wasn't like Catholic Social Services was not their only option. And that is always, I think, critical to point out. Well, so one question, and then I want to move on to how this may impact some other cases. Can Philadelphia change their ordinance because of how it was that the commissioner could provide an exception and this type of thing? Can Philadelphia potentially change their ordinance and again stop Catholic social services from and say that, no, you have to choose between your faith and placing children in same-sex households?
So yeah, that's, you know, looking forward a bit, and you, nobody can tell the future, but given this result, there are a couple things that, you know, the city could do. If the city still wants to move forward with its position and excluding this Christian group from helping children, it could do that. It could say, well, okay, we'll take out the provision in the contract that says there are exceptions granted, meaning it is now completely generally applicable. And so, you know, and we have a rational basis for doing it. And so we get to do that. Or the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania could say, like, or the city could say, yeah, no, public accommodations includes foster care agencies. Or the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania, Gorsuch points this out, could interpret the contract in a different way. So yes, and it could. So, you know, in a way, you could say, well, let's hope that's what happens, so that it really puts the question to the Supreme Court to address Smith. You know, it takes away the ability of Justice, the Chief Justice of Justices Barrett and Kavanaugh to sidestep the question of Smith. You know, so this scenario would be that the city of Philadelphia removes either the exception or they directly apply the Fair Practices Ordinance to Catholic social services. And so when it gets to the Supreme Court, it is generally applicable. And then the court has to decide whether or not the city can discriminate against the Catholic social services on that basis or not. I mean, something in me thinks that, you know, the other side, people, the city of Philadelphia knows that's coming, and like maybe they will find a way to just avoid that fight and avoid having Smith be overturned wholesale. So I don't know what will happen, but yes. And just like the other concurring justices said, this really does put Catholic social services in once more a precarious situation.
And not exactly the same, but of course, this is what we see happening in Masterpiece Cake Shop. And that's what, it's unfortunate. So, you know, the court decides to rule. It's a good ruling, but it's a narrow ruling. So, of course, for our listeners, Masterpiece Cake Shop, Jack Phillips, the cake artist in Colorado, who declined to do a cake for a same-sex event, for a same-sex wedding, won at the U.S. Supreme Court, but on a ground where, because the Colorado commissioners had shown hostility toward Jack and his beliefs. But now Jack is in his, third court case, because the court didn't give Jack the right to follow his beliefs in his business and his First Amendment rights, his free speech, his expressive rights. And so now we've got Jack back in court. We've got the Supreme Court that said to Baronelle Stutzman with Arlene's Flowers that, you know, sent her, after Masterpiece Cake Shop gets decided, okay, Washington State Supreme Court, figure out, you know, a Masterpiece Cake Shop, Arlene's Flowers, did she discriminate wrongfully, illegally, in their view, against a same-sex couple or a same-sex individual? And then, but it's like, because the court just muddies these waters and they don't resolve the cases in the end. So speak to that. Let me back up, though, to just remind people on the Baronelle Stutzman case, because this is one that I think is always very important for people to understand. Baronelle had done flowers for Rob Ingersoll for, 9 years. They had a very good relationship, did all kind of creative, wonderful flower arrangements. Rob walks in one day and says, Baronelle, would you do the flowers for my wedding to another male? Baronelle lovingly says, sorry, Rob, I love you, but I can't do flowers because of my faith in Jesus. These are my paraphrase, obviously. You know, Rob leaves. It explodes on Facebook. Baronelle gets charged, you know, so not criminal, but is accused of discriminating against Rob because he was a gay man. She loses at the Washington State Supreme Court 9-0. The U.S. Supreme Court has her case again. And I always want people to stop and think about this. If Baronelle was discriminating against Rob because he was a gay man, she never would have done flowers for him for 9 years. It was an event. It was a wedding of two men that she believed violated her biblical beliefs about marriage as only the union of one man and one woman, and that's why she declined to do the flower arrangement. And for that, she has been going through how many years of litigation, of the threat that she could lose her livelihood, her business, all of that. And that's where the courage that it takes for people like Baronelle, for Jack Phillips, to continue these legal ballots, I just cannot say enough how much I respect, how much we hold them in high esteem and honor them, because they are doing their best to protect all of us. Okay, so obviously I got on my soapbox because, I mean, I've met Jack and Baronelle both, and they are two of the most humble, Jesus-loving people I've ever had the privilege to be around. And so talk to us about, where are we at? Why is Jack in court again? What's the Supreme Court going to do with Baronelle's case finally? I mean, thoughts on all of that.
Yeah, so that's also true. And, you know, and I think I would also echo something that that Justice Gorsuch said in his concurrence yesterday, that, you know, one thing is to look at all these cases. He called out the same examples you did. So yeah, Jack, it's the round three of, once again, as soon as he won his last case, then, you know, again, he's in another lawsuit of, it looks like, you know, somebody just is instigating this. So, and Justice Gorsuch pointed out the fact that, you know, one thing are these people that suffer because Smith is not clear enough and it's, you know, broiling and it's not, you know, it's lingering there. But there have to be countless other people in our country that seeing how they are treated and seeing how the courts are not upholding their rights to exercise their religion and to live their faith in the public square, that seeing how the courts are treating them, it's got to be putting people under a rock, afraid to live their faith publicly, afraid to speak out, afraid to share their Christian beliefs, which, remember, you know, God is love. You know, like, all of our beliefs are based on Jesus Christ, who died on the cross out of love for us. And people want to share this, but we're afraid that if our views appear too conservative, meaning the way we thought 10 years ago, that we might be called off to court. We might be, you know, sued for all the money we're worth. And that's what's happening. And this is why I think, you know, Justice Alito ended his concurrence saying he's disappointed in what the court has done and not confronting Smith. You know, these are real world cases with real world people. And like you said, you know, these people that are standing up to live for their faith, suffering a quiet persecution financially and socially. It's very important that they're doing what they're doing. And I agree with Alito that, you know, it's time for the court to address this head on. But, you know, I also have sympathy for the majority opinion and Justices Barrett and Kavanaugh, who, you know, I'm sure they honestly thought that this wasn't the case to overturn Smith because there was that it was not applicable in the situation. So, you know, it's all understandable of what happened, but the opinion is going in the right direction, that this is how the court views our free exercise rights. We've had plenty of years under Smith, but we need to move forward. And, you know, Justice Barrett pointed out, well, what's next and what should we do? Well, I assure you there will be plenty of law review articles written on that question.
Well, and isn't this how many are characterizing the Roberts Court, as far as Chief Justice John Roberts, that his tendency is to strive as best as he can for unanimous decisions, to rule on the most narrow grounds possible, and that has been how he has led the court for the years he has been Chief Justice. Would that be accurate, how many observers look at it?
You know, yes, and I was reading one article by Roger Severino. It was probably the best one I've read to date, from yesterday and today. But so Roger Severino, one thing he said was that, you know, when the Supreme Court reaches a unanimous decision, it's for one of two reasons. It's either because it's an easy case, we've seen plenty of those, or it's because it was a controversial case and the court wants to send a clear message. And that's what they did yesterday. It was a controversial case, but they sent a message. And so, yes, it was narrowly decided. It didn't do the sweep overturn of Smith, but it was narrowly decided, giving a victory to Catholic Social Services, saying that the city cannot withhold an exception to Catholic Social Services. Basically, that the Catholic Social Services was merely looking for an accommodation, allowing them to do what they have done for 200 years in the city of Philadelphia, helping needy children, following their religious beliefs. They're motivated by their religious beliefs to do the mission that they're doing of helping the poor. And they just want an accommodation, saying, look, just don't target us. Bypass us and go to one of the 20 other groups in the city and let us continue to operate and help the children. And the city of Philadelphia said no to that. And so it was a unanimous decision that cities cannot do that. And yes, while it was a narrow decision, based on the contract that Catholic Social Services had with the city of Philadelphia. And, you know, and some people will lament that this isn't broadly applicable and it's hard to see how it could apply to the other foster agencies across the country. You know, do take heart in the fact that the Supreme Court does recognize the importance of religious organizations being able to carry out their mission with their religious creed intact. And yes, someday the question will be, you know, front in their face, and they cannot avoid the Smith question. If there's a general rule, a rule of general applicability that's neutral towards religion, they'll face that someday. But for today, where most rules do have some exceptions, you know, religious missions can continue to go forward, living their faith in public.
That's the biggest takeaway. And I think to look at that, to step back and look at not only Fulton on June 17th, but to also look at what's happened over the last few years, Trinity Lutheran, the two decisions this last year where the Supreme Court said that California and New York, you cannot treat churches differently than you are treating businesses. So the court is establishing a significant body of decisions that say you cannot discriminate against entities simply because they're religious and that they have a right to carry out their religious beliefs. And so with that, it is a take heart. It's that we are moving in the right direction. It certainly could have gone very differently. And so we can be grateful that with yesterday's decision, celebrate a big win and look forward to the next one. And so, Greg, any closing comment to that?
Well, just thank you, Kathy, for all of your good work. Thank you to all the listeners that, you know, tuned in and went through all this to learn a bit about our First Amendment and our protections. And, you know, keep going, because we need to live our faith freely. And to do that really means to be out in public and to, you know, if we're persecuted, if we're discriminated against, so be it. But don't let that be silent and keep moving forward.
CAP, this year, all year, we're focused on speaking boldly and to not shrinking back from the fights of the day. And anytime we talk about courts and justices, I want to just finally remind the listeners, elections matter. It's in our state of Arizona, it's a governor who appoints the judges. And of course, nationally, it's the president with the Senate confirming. And we at least have had through the last 4 years prior to this year in the administration, we have had a good group of judges appointed. And so we're grateful the Barretts and the Kavanaughs that are on the court today. So with that, thanks so much, Greg.
Thank you for listening to Engage Arizona. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe, rate, and give a review on any podcast platform you use. For more information, visit azpolicy.org.